I've got nine lives, cat's eyes, and that's why you're welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and in the intervening interval, we'll examine the roots of kraut with Michael Rother of Neu. Loud-faced Michael Han will join us to review new music from Stornoway, Boy Better Know, and Ukraine. We'll have Joseph K in the feature with No Name. But first up, we're in discussion with a man who needs no introduction and only one name. That's Jarvis. Angela, Angela, an infinite symphony. Angela, 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 she is no about poetry. Angela, and she's nearly 23, making 4.50 an hour. That was Angela by Jarvis Cocker, the first release from the new album Further Complications, or Further Compilations if you read the review in this week's NME. Interestingly enough, fact fans. It's Herr Cocker's second as a solo artist. We've gone gaga over Jarvis on Guardian/Music this week. You can still listen to exclusive streams of the album as we speak. And at the epicenter of the Cocker cacophony has been Rosie Swash, who joins me here today.
Yes, that's right. Right at the centre.
Yes, has it been? It's been a bit of a palaver, hasn't it?
No, how dare you?
Well, I don't know. It's just like Jarvis is here. He's just got off the train from Paris. He's going back on the train to Paris.
We have an interview booked. No, Jarvis has gone glasses shopping. You can't speak to him right now. That kind of thing. But he can get away with it.
He can, because we love him so. And
we do.
And quite why is that? Get to the heart of the Jarvis phenomenon for kind of people who read our site and might well listen to our podcast.
I think began with Pulp making some excellent, the best pop songs of the 90s. And that was down to his personality and his humour and his ability as a frontman and his sort of distinctiveness. But they got to be quite big at some point, but he never changed. You know, you never get the impression this is someone who believes the hype about himself. And he's also, you know, he's kind of quintessentially English. He represents a sort of rain-drenched glamour that I think has turned him into a British institution, while also, you know, hosting cultural shows on Channel 4 and being the compere at a pub quiz in Hackney. You know, those kind of things. That's just totally sums up him. I think my favourite song on the album for the minute is Slush, which has a real sort of melancholy thread to it. And initially I just thought it was a love song because it's got lines like "My heart melted at your touch," but then I read that it was related to or inspired by your trip to the Arctic, which was sort of a musician's mission.
I wrote the musical part of it on the boat when we went with these people from Cape Farewell. It's a thing that was set up about 6 or 7 years ago. They take creative people up to the Arctic regions. I think the first one had Ian McEwan and people on it then. And last year's was the largest one so far, and I was lucky enough to go on it. And you know, the idea is that you're inspired in some way by the experience, and that also in some way draws attention to the issue of climate change. I mean, so Slush seemed, I kind of got that title quickly because that's kind of what I expected to see when I got to the North Pole, because I'd heard so much about global warming. I thought there wouldn't be any ice left, it would just be slush, like that horrible dirty city snow. But then I did go a bit slushy when I was up there. I had a moment on the deck of the boat when I was on my own, and we were going through this kind of fjord, and it was so beautiful, it did give you that feeling of insignificance. It didn't seem to be negative to me, it just kind of made you feel a bit humble and lucky to be a part of it all, but also realise that, I don't know, mankind's a small part of nature, so they shouldn't kind of bully the rest of nature, do you know what I mean? They shouldn't throw the weight around too much. But of course they always do. Not a very complex character, really. The thing that slush can mean two things, you know, it can be the actual physical, dirty, slushy, horrible city snow, or you can have a slushy ballad, you know, that kind of sentimental thing.
I did detect a theme of perhaps the first flashes of love on this album in songs like You're In My Eyes?
I don't know about that. I think there wasn't... The last record probably dealt more with wider things. You know, you had Cunts Are Still Running the World, Auschwitz to Ipswich, Fat Children. For whatever reason, I kind of seemed to tackle subjects more. This time, it just moved closer to home, I suppose. And when you move closer to home, you deal with emotional things. So I think, yeah, this record deals more in emotions than the last one, I think, yeah.
You also, I guess with Angela, I'm thinking of, which is the lead single, writing from a female point of view, which you've always done so brilliantly, right back to the beginning from songs like Lip Gloss and She's a Lady on His and Hers up until now. Why do you feel so comfortable writing from that point of view, or I guess fascinated, or writing about these women, these very strong characters?
Well, I like strong women. I don't like wishy-washy women. You know, I like to be bossed around, basically. I do.
I believe you.
Yeah.
You also sort of, I mean, I guess you allow yourself to take on the role as the shoulder to cry on, which comes up a bit on Leftovers on this album. Is that still based on, I guess, adolescent experiences, or is it a sort of fantasy role you see yourself in as the hero?
Well, I think, you know, I was brought up in a very female-dominated environment, so I'm used to thinking of women as my friends. And then when you get to adolescence and you start fancying women, that's when you get a kind of weird, oh, well, because to feel desire towards a woman is different to being friends to her, with her. And it's the crux of it, really. But I'm not so nice. I'm not such a great shoulder to cry on, I wouldn't imagine. I probably just want my evil way.
I met her in the Museum of Paleontology. And I make no bones about it. I said, if you wish to study dinosaurs, I know a specimen whose interest is undoubted. Trapped in a body that is failing me.
Well, you're still on good terms with Pulp and still playing with them in various band members here and there. Would you ever see the band coming out of hiatus, like I guess just about every other band on the planet at the moment?
Everybody's done it, haven't they? I mean, it seems a bit boring. Would Pulp ever be? Could they ever be raised from their death-like coma? I don't know. Like you say, I get on with the people of the band fine, and so there's no barrier to it that way. But just doesn't seem like there's any point at the moment.
You've made some remarks in the past about, well, I'm thinking more about Freaks, which obviously is quite a long time ago and is the band's first album, which you sort of express a bit of embarrassment about it. And I wondered if you feel that way about playing Pulp's music again, or you still feel like you are connected to it and it is a...
No, I'd say it's the opposite, really. The obvious thing when I started... and embarked on my solo career, which I still find out I can't say that with a smile, but would have been to slip a couple of crowd-pleasing Pulp numbers in. But the reason I don't play them is not because I hate them. It's because it's the opposite, really. That I don't listen to my own music much, but when I hear them on the radio, I think they stand up quite well. But a lot of how those songs sounded was to do with the fact that it was a group that all kind of grown up together and learned how to play together. And so we weren't great musicians by any stretch of the imagination, but we had a certain sound because we'd all done it together. And I just don't think the songs would sound right played by this band. If people have fond memories of those songs, which I'm very flattered that they have, I don't want to kind of mess them up by playing some horrible version of it, you know, so I'd rather just leave it as a pleasant memory for people.
Nobody wants to be your friend, cause you're not from around here. As if that was something to be proud about. The king of the Isle of Dogs feels of children in the box.
That was Jarvis Cocker, and Further Complications is out on May 18th.
And what is more, you can get the entirety of Rosie's chat with Jarvis as a Music Weekly extra. You'll find it at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Michael Handelabra. How are you? How are you, old son?
I'm lit up like a thousand candles.
It's beautiful, actually. I wasn't expecting you to come out with something so poetic, but I appreciate it all the same. I say candelabra because of the candelabra, which the Tory MP claimed expenses on. I'm just wondering, if you were an MP, what egregious thing would you claim expenses on?
I would undoubtedly claim a second home allowance in order to build myself a castle, but that would be solely in order that I would then have a moat that I could claim the expenses for the cleaning thereof.
That's a scamming, that's a Ponzi-like business you're creating there. Rosie, what would you claim?
Well, weirdly, my moat has been looking really dirty recently, so I would pay to have it cleaned.
Great. Okay, well, let's review some music. This is Singles Club, and you are listening to Too Many Man by Boy Better Know.
We need some more girls in here. 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 There's too many men, too many, many men. 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 We need some more girls in here. It's gonna break loose like hell in here. When I see a few blue can shells in here. Bear man, not enough girls in here. Too many men, too many, many men. When I ape and block them stairs in here. No sharp shoes, just like hairs in here. It's air in here. It's only £55 for a bottle, but I don't wanna buy one. I'm looking for a girl, but I can't find one. Thought it was an I'm doing it again party, but it's more like a God forgive me if I bust my 9-1. Wiley, I told you we should have linked them ministry links. Come, we finish these drinks and head out. Can't believe I rented a room and a bed out. Dead out.
We need some more girls in here. We need some more girls in here.
That was Boy Better Know with Too Many Man. Boy Better Know are a grime collective comprising JME, Skepta, Wiley, and some other blokes who snuck in when nobody was looking. This essentially means that Roll Deep and Boy Better Know have come together. That in turn means they can form the Mega Grime and are expected to battle with Godzilla on the streets of Bow, East London this summer. Rosie Swash, tell us about this song.
I like this song. I think it sounds great and I like the way that their rhymes hit the beat. But I like the fact that it's kind of silly and it's got a humour to it. It's not offensive, even though it's all about women. You're kind of waiting for that and there's only hints of that in it. So it's just really them having quite a lot of fun. And I think it's a good example of the way a group like this can make a song that you can imagine being commercially successful without sounding contrived, which is something that Roll Deep actually never managed. You know, as soon as you kind of go over that border where you want to rhyme about things that everyone can kind of have a laugh at and join in, you know, it seems to be a lot of people thinking they've got to become really righteous or, you know, something like that. And I think they've pulled it off. I think it's loads of fun.
It does make an interesting sociological observation, albeit one that's been made before by Flight of the Conchords in Too Many Dicks on the Dance Floor. But it is always the case, isn't it? There's always a kind of preponderance of men in clubs. Mm. And it would be nice if it's, particularly since in the UK, statistically speaking, there are 1.02 women for every man. So there you go. Michael, as somebody who I have a suspicion doesn't listen to grime on a daily basis, does this track stand out for you?
Well, I feel stupid enough talking about any kind of music. I feel like a particular ass offering my opinions on grime and dubstep, which clearly is not aimed at me. However, I've checked this record against the Guardian diversity policies, and it does fit in with employment procedures here, so I have to approve of it on that basis.
Oh, you have to? Polly Toynbee
once told me that she got fed up of all the worthy stuff she got invited to. Why does she never get invited to the fun showbiz events? You don't think Polly will say that kind of thing, do you?
Well, this is Polly on the streets at FWD on a Sunday night getting off the dance floor.
Did I like it? Yes. I find this stuff sometimes a bit frightening, to be honest, as a middle-aged man, well, approaching middle-aged ladies, yeah. Not quite middle-aged, with, you know, two children and a mortgage. I do find this stuff coming out of mobile phones as frightening as I am meant to. But I didn't find this frightening. I rather liked it. I thought it sounded like a hit.
I mean, this is another interesting thing about all these grime sort of can move into hip-hop or it can move towards pop, and Tinchy Strider still being number one as we speak. All these things are quite fluid at the moment. But you do get the sense that they are, and obviously I would like to reference Dizzy Rascal's Bonkers at this point, they are all getting quite a keen ear for what makes a pop hit in the UK, and they're all going towards it.
I do think that's actually interesting, that there are records coming out of this scene now that do sound like they were made to be listened to outside Three Streets in Hackney. Mm. I mean, for years, you'd hear these things, think, but who's going to buy it? No one's going to buy it, because it's so clearly a product of its particular environment. But you're right, you're absolutely right. They're starting to sound like hits, and because they sound like hits, they're becoming hits.
Too Many Man, it's all over the JME and Boy Better Know MySpace. And if you text Too Many Man to 78789, something will undoubtedly happen. Second track on Singles Club is Zorbing by Stornoway. Absorbing by Stornoway, a five-piece folk band from Oxford, comprised of two sets of brothers and one other. Stornoway are the most interrelated band since the Osmonds, or perhaps the Nolans. Stornoway famously features in the shipping forecast, which, as a piece of PR, beats doing a tie-in with T-Mobile. Michael.
Well, if grime is kind of culturally non-specific to me, this is the kind of stuff that is completely culturally specific. You know, university educated, middle class, white people singing about dreaming of having it off with the girl of their dreams in the rented room at the top of a shared student house. Admittedly, I'm a little older than that now, but I think this is just a beautiful, beautiful song. I mean, incredibly simple. There's very little to it. I think the use of the harmonies is wonderful. I think the lyrics are just about interesting enough. I think one thing that Stornoway do quite interestingly is be very specific geographically. So in that song, they make reference to southeast London and to going through the streets of Cowley in Oxford, where they come from. And there's a kind of real warmth and very English feeling about it. I like the way that the singer broadens his vowels. I mean, you see that especially when you see them live. It sounds like he's trying to be a yokel, isn't he? But I think that's great. Someone who's not trying to copy kind of American trends. There's something beautiful and heartwarming about them. And I've got to say, I went to see them the other week because their publicist had been nagging me for a while. And I was just, yeah, we'll get it out the way. I'll go and see them. They came on, and my jaw just dropped at how good they were. Remarkably accomplished. They got a load of really, really good songs. And this one hasn't even been ruined for me by the fact that my 8-year-old daughter, who's learning the trumpet, keeps playing the refrain out of tune on her trumpet about 5 times a day. Even that can't ruin the marvels of this song
for me.
Well,
that shows that the song has spoken to her, at least.
It has.
Rosie Swash, time you came in on this.
I like the beginning a lot with the one note played over and over again. I really like that in songs in general. I think it's got something quite weirdly sort of propulsive about it, but it's very gentle. And I think refrain you were talking about, which I assume is the one that your daughter plays on the trumpet, lying in your attic, I can feel the static, a storm is brewing. It's kind of how the song evolves. It just cuts really subtly, gets bigger and bigger until it feels like it's on top of you. And it's really like, I think it's a lovely song. I don't like the rest of their stuff on MySpace. I have to say, I was a bit kind of, that's a bit much for me.
Yeah. I have to admit also, I've cheated here because this isn't out for another month, but I thought I'm not going to get the chance to eulogise this, which is my favourite single of the year.
And it's playable on MySpace, so it qualifies. Okay, that is Zorbing, which you can listen to on Stornoway's MySpace now. And they're playing the Glass Festival too, as well as lots of other smaller gigs. Final track this week is Svetlana Loboda and Be My Valentine. Be My Valentine by Svetlana Loboda. This is Ukraine's entry in the 2009 Eurovision Song Contest, as if you didn't guess. Which means, by the way, that you can't call it rubbish because it's kitsch. Svetlana recently claimed to be launching a social protest against false glamorous trends and sticky stereotypes. And that was by launching her own clothing label. Now that's kitsch. I chose this because I had to go through all 42 entrants for the Eurovision this week. So it's been on my mind. And this was the only one that struck me in any way as being good in a kind of like a conventional popular music sense. And that's apart from the Romanian one about Balkan girls going on the piss, but that's for different reasons that I like that. The reason I brought this track here is today is not because of the lyrics. I'm still unclear as to whether she's a crazy bomb or a crazy ball, or whether she's doing an advert for the aerialator.
She's singing about men's bombs, isn't she, I believe? It's a mispronunciation.
Oh, yeah, I see. No. But I like the structure, you see. I like the way it explodes in the chorus and the way the whole track has a little bit of bite about it. I was also intrigued by the way they take the horn at the beginning of the track, a little bit of Balkanization. Almost all the entrants in this year's Eurovision have some kind of Balkan music element to try and appeal to the Eastern Bloc, who's got the whole competition sewn up. And they take it and they turn it into a bass line, which sounds like something that Diplo might do in one of his Bailey moments, or Timbaland. And I've heard lots of different ethnic types of music reappropriated for the purposes of pop R&B, but not Balkan stuff before, so I quite like that.
Rosie.
Yes. It sounds to me literally like an Eastern European version of a Britney song. That's obviously what she's gone for. The lyrics are absolutely hilarious. The fact that she's got to feel she's got to sing it in English to appeal to the judges is that's understandable. That's just what it is. But, you know, I can't bear to be alone. You call me on the phone, that kind of thing. But it's not that a million miles away from what Britney would do.
No, indeed. She's got reminisce in there as
she's
well.
She's got reminisce. Three syllables. I can't imagine listening to it. But I don't know if this is the sort of thing that the judges go for. Are they not a bit like, we like our women to have a bit more...
I think you're right.
..in the wardrobe department in a bit. So, you know, really, she's like taking a huge risk.
Well, that's right. That's
Sex
right.
doesn't sell at Eurovision.
Have you seen the official video?
For yes.
The official video is terrifying. The official video really does look like Hellraiser.
It's not subtle.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of... Subtle. It's weird and disturbing. I think she's meant to be coated in chocolate, but it looks like she's coated in blood. Then you suddenly go to a groin shot. Then there's bare-chested men beating drums. It's like a fascist fetish party, the video. Intensely disturbing. Fortunately, the record isn't quite so disturbing.
Interesting detail on with regards to the video, the crotch shot of which you speak. It is.
It's a very tight crotch
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, and there is one of each. There is one for both genders. It's not gender culturally specific. Oh. But the female shot is basically been lifted from another Russian pop promo altogether. There is another Russian video which has exactly that shot. They've obviously watched and got, that's a good idea. Now, we should put that in the Eurovision entry.
I'm going to pick you up on two things there. Firstly, another Russian video. Russia and Ukraine are very, very, very sensitive.
You've already
about being
done
mistaken
this. Okay,
for each other.
Okay.
Second thing is, how much time do you spend watching Russian crotch shots?
No, this is actually it was recommended to me by, I believe, SV80 on the blog. And when SV80 recommends, I tend to listen, Michael. That's what happens. All right, well, that's enough on Svetlana Loboda. But you can download that now off the Eurovision website, should you so choose. Deep in the heart of Blogshire, these opinions were offered on last week's Tracked.
Swerky Mercury said, someone seems to have got the Toddler T record mixed up with a Flight of the Conchords outtakes. Heads should roll.
Berlin Calling says, Singles Club is getting more willfully obscure by the week. Why review a great song with wonderful put-downs by Lily Allen when you could be raving about an Italian dude called Gian Maria singing about where a river meets the sea?
She just doesn't get enough press, that Lily Allen. Do you know what I mean? She could really go places if people were willing to get behind her and acknowledge her talent.
We want your reviews of this week's tracks, Svetlana Loboda, Storn Away and Boy Better Know, on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you think of those musical numbers and these other tracks that are out to buy now.
This is really it, the thing it's all about.
Eels, my timing is off.
A single deal. We can never say never, while we don't know it, but time and time again, younger now than we were.
The Fray, Never Say Never. Taylor Swift, Teardrops on My Guitar. I wonder if he knows he's all I think about
it, but he's a reason for the tears. Thanks to young Michael. I actually wrote young in the script before we came in. I didn't realise we were going to have a debate about your middle-agedness in the middle of the pod. But I'd like to reaffirm this point. Thanks to young Michael for coming in to join us in Singles Club today.
It is always a pleasure, Paul. It is never a chore.
Great news. And that's it for Singles Club. Time to move on. Move on, in fact, to something new. That's supposed to sound like new, but anyway, that was the sound of Noi's Device for M, as interpreted by up-and-coming indie sensations School of Seven Bells. That track forms part of a new compilation, punnily enough, called Brand Neu, which celebrates the German band's influence on all things popular musical. And what influence is that precisely, Rosie Swash?
Well, they are said to have created, and I say said by journalists at the time, a sound that was called Motorik. It describes repeated phrases that instantly sort of get into your head, that they don't stop throughout their often quite long tracks. So it has a kind of forward motion to it, but you also have very progressive, almost psychedelic guitars going on there. And I think there was also something quite minimal about it. Bands like Joy Division were early fans of theirs. But then, you know, it continues on into, you see on this compilation, LCD Sound System, Foals, Sonic Youth, all of them sort of paying homage to Noise. Very, very distinctive sound, either through their own songs or through cover versions.
So you spoke with Michael Rotha, who is like the head honcho of the band.
What was it you were trying to create when you put together Noi?
When I started to concentrate on forgetting all the clichés, the musical heroes I had grown up with, the idea was to start from scrap, to try and develop a completely new musical identity, which was mine. That led to forgetting all the harmonies and melodies and the fast finger movements on the guitar. I was a solo guitarist in earlier days, and the idea of a solo was scrapped, and it was just a new beginning. It started with one note, one key, trying to explore the possibilities of creating a new music with simple structures and new sounds. This approach is what still appeals to people nowadays. I think it doesn't happen so many times that musicians really try to forget what they have heard before and to create something that is new.
Or at least it's not successful when they try.
Maybe you're right. I'm quite willing to say that I was fortunate in many ways when I met Kraftwerk in 1971. I didn't know the band. I just stumbled into their studio one day. I was 20. I was in the process of trying to find a new way, and meeting Ralf Hütter and jamming with him, that was a big sensation for me, to find someone with whom I could exchange harmonic ideas, melodic ideas, without discussion, without blues, without all the clichés of the past. Futter and I, we have some similarities in our musical background, the classical background. My mother played classical piano, and I think that is more or less the idea behind my musical feelings for melodies and harmonies. It's the European history without trying to copy any classical structures. I mean, I always avoided learning anything about musical theory. I never wanted to know anything that could stop me from feeling free, from making all the mistakes learned musicians would attribute to my music.
You were involved with Kraftwerk in the early days,
yes.
Very early days, but you didn't stay with them. You left and formed Noi.
That's true, but the lineup was Florian Schneider, Klaus Dinger and myself. We did a lot of live appearances in 1971, and some were really good, I remember. At least that was my impression. People got very excited. I was very excited. But there were also many evenings that weren't great. It was spontaneous music. It was very rough music. There was a lot of tension in the band, especially between Florian Schneider and Klaus Dinger. And I didn't enjoy that. I mean, three very different personalities clashing in a way. So we tried to record the second Kraftwerk album with Connie Planck. That's where I met Connie, another lucky circumstance for me. And we failed at that. And after stopping halfway through, I think we didn't even talk about it. It was clear that we didn't want to go on together. And Klaus Dinger and I, we had more in common, I think, a vision of music. So we decided to go on as a duo. And that was the project Noi.
journalists coined a couple of terms to describe your music and the music of various other bands of your ilk, and that was krautrock. But the other description of the actual sound of your music was motoric, and I guess that was an attempt to sum up the very unique repetitiveness but also a progressiveness to the sound. How do you feel about those terms? Did they ever mean anything to you? I mean, especially krautrock.
It's a silly term, of course. I think it was derogative in a way in the early 70s, but I've experienced so many tags being applied to my music. I don't waste energy fighting these terms because people all around the world have more or less agreed on calling music from Germany krautrock. I mean, the early 70s music, at least. I tried to explain that it was my wish to create a music that was my own music, not similar to anything else, and not similar to any other German music.
Is there anybody now that you think, perhaps on the compilation or otherwise, who's been successful at doing what you did, which was creating your own identity?
To be honest, I only know a few of them. I know Benjamin Curtis, School of Seven Bells. They did a track for that compilation. He's a good friend and he's a very gifted, talented, inspiring musician.
Player. And they did Device für M.
That's right. Guess who is M?
Ah, I see.
I thought that was obvious. Well, maybe you have to know that we are very close friends. Benjamin joined me for two concerts at ATP in 2005 when I performed as a solo musician, and also in New York in 2006. And I think he'd come to visit me. I think we'll try to do some new collaboration, maybe a live collaboration also. Project I really loved in the 70s and which was a commercial failure then. And last year, I know in the British press, there have been big articles, something we've never experienced in the 70s. And also Neu, of course, worldwide attention, even selling more albums than back in the 70s. And so I'm really very pleased about the way things have been developing. And if Brand Neu adds some more attention to our music, of course, I'm just happy about that.
Is out on May 18th on Feral Tone Records.
Okay. Feature with no name time now. Your man is Paul Lester. His specialist subject, post-punk heavyweights Joseph K.
Early 80s Scottish band Joseph K were quintessential post-punks, They were named after a character in a Franz Kafka novel and, with their Oxfam suits and sombre expressions, had a look about them that suggested they were thinking seriously about the meaning, or meaninglessness, of life. Their frontman was an enigmatic character called Paul Haig, once hailed by the NME as the saviour of pop, and by Sounds as haircut of the year for his then-notorious shaved-at-the-sides buzz cut. Haig's deep, rich voice made him a sort of post-punk crooner, while the band trailblazed a serrated brand of indie funk. It's not inconceivable that Franz Ferdinand owned a couple of their records.
All across my run, I couldn't get back to you.
Was signed to the celebrated Postcard label alongside Orange Juice, but what they did with their soul influences was far darker than Edwyn Collins and co. Songs like It's Kinda Funny, Sorry for Laughing and The Missionary were intellectual disco or existentialist funk, dance music that mused upon the absurdity of existence. But they also rocked hard. Joseph K were masters of the memorable riff. No wonder Johnny Marr, then 2 years away from forming the Smiths, was such a massive fan. They burned brightly but briefly. By 1981, after just 18 months, 5 singles and 1 album, Joseph K split up. Haig spent the first half of the 80s making great electropop records such as The Only Truth with Bernard Sumner of New Order, but failing to achieve the superstardom that everyone predicted for him. Not that he gave up. By the 90s, he'd done everything from soundtrack music to an album with hip-hop pioneer Curtis Mantronic. In the last 2 years alone, he has recorded an album of electronic pop songs that sounds like Sinatra sings Kraftwerk, a second one of more conventional pop rock, and a third with his new band, The Cathode Ray. Their lead-off single, Slipping Away, is a brilliant burst of jangle pop joy. Like Joseph K, only minus the mordant miserabilism. Nothing like Joseph K, then. Paul Haig, happy at 50... Sorry for laughing.
That was Paul Lester on Joseph K. Leaves us with just enough time for some of your face back on Tim Jones's moving interview with Nicky Wire in last week's pod.
Kebabette said, Nicky Wire, wow. I'm glad to hear he is just as thoughtful and honest in person as in his lyrics. That was an utter gem of an interview, Tim Jones. Thanks.
Tasnim said, for someone who had such a minimal effect on the band musically, as brilliant as they've mostly been, since Richie left, they've never actually been the same to me. It's exciting then to be gifted this record and so late in the day as well. It's what makes them so great. They might have made mistakes in their time, but it's these twists and turns that, for me, have made the band the greatest there's ever been. Right, you can go to guardian.co.uk/musicweekly and tell us all your thoughts on this week's guests. That's Jarvis Cocker and Michael Rother and Singles Club and Feature With No Name featuring Joseph K. You can do so all week. We're back next Friday. Register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. That is all for this week. Thank you so much, Rosie.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Bye.